Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 taking you through a beautiful yet cold Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee, alongside Marquise Munson. I called you Marcus Munson. That was really disrespectful
almost,
of me.
Almost Mariota right there.
I really did. I apologize, Marquise. He doesn't really seem to accept my apology.
We can't
at
hear
all.
It. We're, you know,
he's just, done.
He might be upset.
It took me 30 seconds into the show to make him mad. He's not going to talk to me the rest of the day.
That's
usually
a good start.
Takes until like right before the end of the show before he gets mad at me. And now it's 30 seconds in. So this is a new record. Alex, how are you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing all right. How about you? You know, you really can't bring Marquise off that, you know, high of Alabama baseball being 9-0.
Yeah. I mean, he's fired up about Alabama baseball, which why wouldn't you be at this point of the year?
He slowly nods his head.
Nothing gets me fired up like Alabama baseball.
Well, Robbie, big opportunity for the Preds tonight.
Big opportunity for the Preds. A huge game tonight against the Calgary Flames. Preds back in a playoff spot, as we talked about yesterday with Adam Vingan on the show, for the first time since November the 13th. And tonight they go up against the team that's right in front of them in the standings. The first wild card team, the Calgary Flames. Alex, in terms of regular season games, this one is about as big as it gets tonight for the Preds.
Sure, and they said two points back of Calgary right now. You're able to tie that up and keep two games in hand, put yourself in a good spot with the wild card. I mean, and really and truly, you're competing against three other and maybe four other teams if you want to throw Minnesota in there and give them the benefit of the doubt right now. So it doesn't really matter whether it's Calgary, Winnipeg, Arizona, any opportunity you get on a given night, you've got to take advantage of it. We sat here a week and a half ago and wondered if they'd turn the page. You can sit here right now and wonder if they've turned the page, and they continue to have to answer that question.
They do, but at least they're back in a playoff spot, and I think you watch them play, and you feel a lot better about the way they're playing, the way they're responding than you did earlier this season. And I look at the Flames. It's funny to me that really, like, the downturn of their season really started in late October on Halloween night against the Flames. They had a big lead. I think they were up 4-1 in that game, and they ended up losing 6-5 in overtime on a ridiculous goal by Matthew Tkachuk from the Flames. And that was on Halloween night, and that was really the start of what ended up being an awful November for this club. They unraveled after that. Obviously, we know what happened that led to the firing of Peter Laviolette. But it is interesting that they've kind of come full circle now. They've battled their way back into a playoff spot, and tonight they go up against that same Calgary team at home with a chance, I think, to make a statement to the rest of the NHL that this is the Preds team that we expected to see at the beginning of the season. We haven't seen it a ton this year, but tonight, with 20 games left in the season, that's got to be a good place to start against this Calgary team because, look, this game, and this is, you know, maybe too much of hyperbole, but this game could literally decide who's in the playoffs and who's not at the end of the
season.
I mean, I think the standings are going to be that tight.
Well, you put yourself 4 points back if you were to lose this one to Calgary tonight. You're 20 games left. You've played 62. They're 31-31 if you combine the regular regulation and overtime losses. They have scored 198 goals. They have let up 198 goals. You could literally say that this is the beginning of a new season, and you have 20 games to push into the playoffs. You're playing at home. You have an opportunity in front of a home crowd that has been better lately. I think that there's no doubt that there's been a little more energy in the building. And when the team is showing response, the crowd has seemed to show response, you have to continue to build some semblance of momentum somewhere. So if you're able to build it at Bridgestone and you're just playing for a wild card, that means you have to be not terrific, not great, not, the best team in the league, but good enough down the stretch. Winning your home games is the foundation that you can set. From there, you pick up a few, steal a few on the road, and you're looking at probably a playoff spot. There was an email sent out from the Preds last night to their season ticket holders trying to sort of drum up this excitement of, we need you in the building. We're starting to play better at home, and they are. And quite frankly, simply putting together a, reputable, decent to watch, something unawful at home is a decent start for this club. And you hope that a game like this, against the team that's right ahead of you in the standings, two crucial points that either put you a decent amount back, could potentially tie you, at least within very close striking distance if you were to win in overtime, that this is the kind of game you have to see some response to. Like, wouldn't it be great to just think, man, watch the first 10 minutes of this game, regardless what happens, and think they came out and they tried to land the first punch.
Yeah.
But you don't always say it with this club. Like, last game against the Ottawa,
not a very good first period.
First period was, mediocre, I would give it.
Big show today. We've got John Hines will join us, Predators head coach, at 7:30. Joe Rexroad from The Athletic will check in at 8 o'clock. From the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, Casey Alexander, Belmont basketball coach, joins us at 8:45. And at 9:30, it's our good friend Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, will join us at 9:30. Alex, when I take a look at the Predators and what they've done as of late, they've got points in 6 out of their past 7 games. Still not really seeing much in terms of production from their star players, although I thought Johansson played much better against Ottawa the other night. Arvidsson scored another goal on the power play. He seems like he's starting to come on a little bit. I still think not quite to his top level. Tonight would be a perfect time to respond with your top guys, because as the Flames have shown this year, whether it's Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Sean Monahan, all these different guys that they have, maybe not elite-level players in this league, but star players in this league, and if you don't bring your best against those guys, they can make you look pretty bad in a hurry.
Yeah, and it's the kind of players that, quite frankly, seems to me like give the Predators problems sometimes. Like, you look at the Carolina Hurricanes game. Is Sebastian Aho or Niederreiter or any of those guys superstars? No, probably not. They're good players. In the league. Or, when they play the Canucks or Pettersson gives them problems. That's the kind of guys that seem to have sort of bit the Predators in the butt. It would be nice. I used to watch a Predators game and love when you'd see 3 goals and one of them was from your third line defenseman and Colton Sissons got one and maybe Arvidsson got the other. Because I thought, balanced scoring, it's nice to see. They need production from up and down the lineup. It'd be nice to come out and play a game where they score 4 goals and it's Matt Duchene assisting on 2 of them, Johansson on the other 2, and Forsberg gets 2 and Arvidsson gets 1. I want the dudes to be the dudes. And they're being paid like that. Sure, at moments you've seen it. I don't even know if perhaps we're too easy on them at some points. No, they've not been terrible. Most games they don't go out and hurt the team, but your $7, $8, $6 million a year players haven't always been that. It would be interesting. It would be like if the Titans signed, let's say the Titans signed Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill this offseason, and you play in some hypothetical world where they've brought in Odell Beckham, and then their best player turns out to be like Tajay Sharp, who has scored 6 times, and he's kind of your Rocco Grimaldi-esque guy that comes out of nowhere. And you're happy because you're playing decently enough, but you're wondering, how in the world is Tajay Sharp, better than Derrick Henry and Odell Beckham? Apples and oranges comparison there, certainly. But to your point, the players that are being paid need to play like they deserve those contracts. And you really only see it fleetingly. And that is exactly what you see from this team, just inconsistency.
And it's time for Philip Forsberg to start scoring goals. And look, he hasn't scored since January the 30th. He scored 2 goals in that game. He's gone the entire month of February without scoring a goal. Tonight's a big game. Tonight's a big moment for this team. Not only for where they are specifically right now, it's a big moment for this team tonight in terms of where they're going to be and where they're going to go for the rest of this season. You need your big players. And when I'm talking big players, I'm talking guys can step up and score and can produce in key moments. We've seen Philip Forsberg do that time and time again throughout his career. it's time for him to put the puck in the net tonight.
Yeah, you hear about puck luck, and did he find a crease there, or did he get an easy one? No. You know, I'm sick of hearing about puck luck and whatever shooting percentage, and that's down, you know, like 3 points this year and several points down from its apex a couple of years ago. If you're a great player, put the puck in the net. You don't watch many games and hear, and I'm going to compare him to someone that's truly great. You don't watch many games and people are talking about that Ovechkin, you know, he's just not finding the crease right there.
Right.
Make your own luck. Get an easy one. I don't care what you've got to do, where Philip Forsberg needs to get to. If he needs to play, you know, more in front of the net or take a couple of chances, take a few, because there's no excuse at this point to great players don't go a month without scoring. It's too hard in this league to survive without your best players playing well. The Predators are surviving to the credit of a couple of other guys, and John Hines has turned some guys around. But to your point, I mean, if anyone, Forsberg needs to be the guy, and you're talking about your top four, Johansson, Arvidsson, Duchesne, Forsberg, be your best four.
I'm interested to see what they do with the lines tonight against Calgary, because after wins, you normally don't expect a ton of turnover, but I thought the lines were very interesting the last game. You had Bonino playing with Forsberg and Granlund. You had Tura still with Grimaldi and Smith, and we know that line of Bonino, Grimaldi, and Smith has been basically their go-to line all season. I do think at some point they're going to get back to that, but then the question becomes, okay, where do you put Kyle Tura? Do you move him back to the wing? Do you keep him at center playing with maybe Forsberg or somebody? Like, what do you do at
do
that
point?
Do
they talk a lot about getting used to playing with their teammates right now? Is that what you're getting in the locker room?
Not really. But I think a lot of times that can be overblown. I think, you know, they're professional athletes. Go out there and play with who you're playing with. But I do think there is something to be said by, as you go down the stretch here and you're getting into the playoffs, hopefully for their sake, going into the playoffs, you would like to have some lines established, not only for a chemistry aspect, which I think is important, but if your lines are established and you've got some chemistry and they've got some familiarity with each other, that typically means they're playing well and that you're forcing the coach to leave the lines
together.
And I think that's the next step for these star players, especially in the top six. You have to force John Hines to keep you together, and you have to do that by your play on the ice. And that's what I'm kind of interested to see what the lines look like tonight against Calgary, because we've seen John Hines is not afraid to shuffle the deck a little bit when the production is not quite there. And they were okay last game against Ottawa. I still think there's another level those top six guys especially can get to.
It tells me everything I need to know when you look up one day and all of a sudden, or at least in the morning skate, they're trying out something like Ryan Johansson with Austin Watson on a line. I mean, that, you know, you are fishing for anything at that point. I mean, you are just hoping that you flip over the coin and it turns out you flipped over one that's incredibly valuable. Now, is the line shuffling the ultimate problem for this team? I would probably say no. You know, you're to your point, you have to play well. You're a professional athlete. Play with who you're out there with. And it's not like these guys don't know each other. You're telling me that Philip Forsberg doesn't know Colton Sisson's game? You know, no.
They played together long enough.
I mean,
enough.
How many practices have these guys been together, you know, and just watched one another play? I mean, like the back of their hand, I'm sure they know those guys' games. So it will be interesting to see the lines tonight, and it would be nice, you know, at least one, right?
Yeah.
Because it's really that top six that's getting shuffled. The other two stay largely the same. Maybe one guy moves in and out. That top six will be interesting, but maybe something we can ask John Hines about when he comes on with us here in just over an hour.
When we come back, what is this next six-game stretch? What will that say about this Predators team? A lot of tough games against quality competition coming up for the Nashville Predators. What are we going to learn about this Predators team during that stretch? We'll get into that next. 615-737-1025. If you've got thoughts on the Preds, we'll take your calls and your text messages at 615-737-1025. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17. And, Alex, it's a big time of year for the Nashville Predators, a gigantic six-game stretch coming up for them beginning tonight against the Calgary Flames at home. They've got Calgary, Colorado, and Edmonton all at home in their next three games. Then Minnesota on the second half of a back-to-back next Tuesday. And then two games in a row against the Dallas Stars, one at home next Thursday and one on the road next Saturday. Obviously, some really good teams there in that mix, particularly Colorado and Dallas in the Central Division. And then, of course, Calgary tonight, they're fighting with for playoff spots. Edmonton as well, right there in the mix in the Pacific Division. We're going to learn a whole lot about how far this group has actually come and is actually playing in the next six-game stretch here. Because, look, it's one thing, and it's nice. You got it. We've said, you know, you got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat, and they've done that against Ottawa. They did that against Columbus. But it's going to be a different challenge and different kind of challenge for this team over the course of the next week here.
Yeah, I woke up this morning. I walked outside. It was cold out. It was a good day to have some seat heaters in your car. I thought, this is, you know, feels like hockey season now. And you really have to make your hay at home. Then the Preds go on the road in the middle of March for five in a row. Now, they come back home and play four of seven at home to finish out the year, which is nice. But you really need to put yourself in a decent position, because if you're still, you know, 2 points back, 3 points back, as you head into a five-game road trip, and you've sort of lost the games in hand, you know, I can't see a better stretch left on this schedule for them to make a run. However, caveat, you do get later in the season a couple of matchups against these teams that you're likely to be right in the thick of it with. Winnipeg at home on March 24th, and you go to Arizona, which will be a tough game for them to win, on the 28th of March, second to last game of the year. That really could be a playoff starting right there. I almost think that it's good, though, for this team that sort of seemed to get complacent or get a little too comfortable. They needed, you know, 15 wake-up calls this year, as they always put it, to kind of be in this. You are in the playoffs right now mode, and every game is like a playoff game, and we have to win it.
Well, I think the other part is, you know, we've talked all year long about how they've had games in hand on people all year, and you have to take advantage of those games in hand. Well, those games in hand are about to disappear in a hurry.
They're here.
Because you've got
here
a ton of games coming up. I mean, and I was talking to Ryan Ellis about this after the game the other night, and I said, you know, I just asked him quite simply, can this compressed schedule that you're about to go through, even though it's challenging, even though you're going to have a lot of back-to-backs in the month of March, I think they have four back-to-backs in the month of March, and it's going to be really grueling in terms of the schedule they have and the toll it takes on their body. Can that be a good thing for this team in terms of forcing you to get into that playoff mode and forcing you to get to your top level? And he's like, yeah, I mean, it's basically win and you're in, and they control their own destiny. That, to me, I'm interested to see how they handle that, because, like you said, Alex, if you handle that the right way and you start playing towards your top level of hockey, you're going to be playing exactly the way you want to be playing as you get into the playoffs, which, as we've seen from this team the course of the past 3 or 4 years, that can be just as important as what seed you are in the playoffs.
So let's play a hypothetical. Let's say everybody has 0 points and we've got 20 games left and you got a 20-game season and you stretch the playoffs. If the Preds play their best, where would they be seated? Would you put them at third in the Western Conference in the last 20 games? Like, if they play their best hockey, would you put them still in the wild card? Are they the best team in the Western Conference? I mean, what is the best? What is the benchmark for this team?
Well, it's going to be really hard to get in the top three in the Central. I mean, Dallas is the third team right now in the Central, and they're 10 points ahead of you.
But I'm just saying, if you just were going to play 20 games right here the rest of the season, you didn't care what happened the first 62, and the Preds played their best hockey. Right. The Preds played their best hockey. Where would you expect their best hockey to put them in the standings?
Well, I would expect their best hockey to put them near the top of the standings. I mean, I think those were the expectations coming into the year. I mean, it wasn't just locally. I mean, they were widely picked nationally to compete for a Stanley Cup and widely picked to win a Stanley Cup nationally. So if they get to their top level – and a lot of people say their top level was in October. I don't think their top level was in October either. I mean, they were scoring a lot of goals.
They were
also giving up a lot of goals too. So certainly they were better in October, but I still don't think we've seen the top level from this group or really anything close to it at all this year, which I think if you're a Predators fan, it's number one, discouraging that we haven't seen that through 62 games. But I think it's also encouraging that if they get to that, you're going to see them play at a level and with a consistency that they have not shown to play with all season long.
And so the very question that a lot of people have to be wondering right now, I think that you are pretty unique if you've not had this at least crossed your mind, if you're a Predators fan, is how similar right now is this team to the team that did get hot and make the Stanley Cup final run, who that team for many months of the season labored, played decent hockey. Now, expectations weren't as high. We probably didn't talk about it as much, but they played mediocre hockey. They did just enough to get in. They get in, I think, on the final game of the regular season or, you know, really close to that, and end up making a run to the Stanley Cup finals. The intangibles of that was a team coming together, a team getting hot at the right time, and a goaltender in Rene who shut out the Blackhawks, I think, twice in a row at home to start the playoffs. And that's a darn good way to start and really gets your team a lot of momentum. Everybody starts feeling well when you're doing that. Doesn't matter how many goals you score, as long as you get one. Is there similarities there? I mean, that may be an impossible question to answer, but everybody's thinking it, and you kind of hope that that's the blueprint that they're going to end up following.
Well, I think there are some similarities. We talked about it with Adam Vingan yesterday. They're 1 point off that pace. So those two teams are in a very similar spot to where they were in the standings that year. Now, the difference is the expectation for that team and the expectation for this team or in two completely different places.
This team is a victim of how that team did to set expectations.
It is, and it's also a victim of how much money has been doled out there to be paid towards your top players, like Johansson and Duchesne, Yossi's contract kicking in next year, all these different things. So, yes, they're in a very similar spot in terms of the standings, in terms of playing better in the second half of the year and elevating yourself into a spot where you feel good, at least, about your chances to make the playoffs. I think the vibe around Nashville and the vibe with his fan base is very different. And I threw the question out there yesterday, you know, where's your confidence level with the Preds back in the playoffs, in a playoff spot for the first time since November? And there were some that were like, you know what, I'm feeling a lot better about this team. But by and large, a lot of the fan base of the response that I got was, you know, I'm still very much in wait and see mode with this group. My confidence is not quite there yet. Whereas I think if you asked that question a couple years ago or 3 years ago when they made their run to the final, everybody would have been pretty happy about where they were.
Oh, you're just happy to get in. You're still a new franchise. You've never had a lot of historical success. Maybe you win a series. Maybe you win two, and that would be a great season. The fact that they made the Cup has now sort of doomed from an optimism standpoint the next couple of years. Now, to your point, the big difference is they've doled out a lot of money. You said 10, 12 minutes ago you felt like Johansson played better last game. The numbers would back that up. It doesn't matter what you're looking at. I'm looking at several of them here. Corsi, four. How many expected goals one line should have had against their opponent? The only positive line in the Ottawa Senators game was Blackwell, Johansson, Sissons. And like we were talking about, you talk about a bizarre line. Nobody would have drawn that up at the beginning of the season. Forsberg, Bonino, Granlund, not that good. Smith, Turris, Grimaldi, better. But still, you know, if you just put them on their time of the ice, they were slightly worse than their opponents. I mean, Blackwell, Johansson, Sissons is not exactly what you roll into the playoffs with as your money line.
You would not think so.
There's a lot to be figured out, and the fact that these guys are paid so much and you are still having to figure that out is the very reason why not that many people are optimistic. So, there's no fault in not being optimistic like that when you look at, you know, Blackwell's, Johansson, and Sissons as, you know, your only line really with a positive impact on the game. Now, granted, they got two power play goals, and isn't that the great equalizer in that game? And wouldn't that be nice to see them get hot with?
Absolutely. Special teams has been really an Achilles heel for that team all season long. When we come back, do we feel like the Predators have gotten to a point where they can respond in a situation like they're in tonight with a lot on the line? Do we feel like this team mentally has gotten to that point where they can respond and come out with their best effort? They've had that chance a few times this year and have not been able to do it. Can they do it tonight? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17. Munson's back there with a broken microphone. He can't talk to us anymore. He's very upset about it, as you can see.
He got so upset right off the top of the show, he broke his microphone.
He just broke his microphone. I mispronounced his name one time, and he slammed the microphone up against the wall. It's broken, and now he's never going to be able to talk to us again. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, he's actually leaving. He's about to head out. Oh, he's going to stay.
He actually just left, so we're without Munson for the rest of the show.
Well, home stretch of the week here. You know, we only got 2 days left until a nice weekend coming up.
Munson's just getting an early start there. Good for him. So, Alex, we were talking about the Predators before the break, and they're in a situation tonight where it's a gigantic game for this team. They've just gotten back into a playoff spot. The team that's directly in front of them, 2 points in front of them in the playoffs in terms of the wild card seeding right now, comes into town tonight. You let one get away from you against this team at home earlier this season. This is a big spot for this team at a big point of the season. And there have been a couple times throughout the stretch here of this season where they've had a chance to get back in the playoffs. I think of a game in Edmonton that comes to mind that could have gotten back into a playoff spot for the first time a couple weeks ago in that game and weren't able to close the deal and get it done. That's happened a few times this year. Do we feel like now that the moments are starting to get bigger and bigger with each passing game, do we have enough confidence that this team has come far enough mentally to handle moments like this and respond with their best level? It doesn't always mean you're going to win, but do we feel like they will at least respond with an effort where you're just like, okay, yeah, I mean, that felt like a playoff game out there, and you live with the result at the end of the day.
The answer to that very question probably decides whether they make the playoffs. Because if they come out and, you know, 9 times out of 10, when you feel like they played well, maybe not 9, 8, 7, they win. Because, quite frankly, they're often talented. They're often the more talented team. And if you can feel like the Predators come out and give you some base level of consistency, of effort, of execution on a daily basis, they probably make the playoffs. Because talent's not their problem. Talent certainly is not their problem. You don't think coaching is their problem. It can't be at this point. You made a coaching change. These guys are professionals. Man up and play hockey. They know how to play. They know what good hockey looks like. But the consistency level, that's the ultimate question.
Yeah.
Do I have any confidence that they have reached a point where they always respond with their best hockey? No. Might they have reached that point? Maybe. Might we go back down the same cycle in a week from now? We sit here asking the very same question. Yeah. No one knows the answer to that. I don't even think John Hines knows the answer to that. Because you can't. I mean, the team has been too bipolar to really feel like there is no light that goes off that tells you there's no white smoke that comes out of the building once they figured it out. You just have to hope that they have.
Josh writes in on Twitter and says, I'm going to use this analogy. You know when you're at a meeting that pumps you up, you get that feeling you're going to go back and apply those changes? The Preds are doing the same thing, but they don't change. The expectations for this team are so high. I think that's a good point by Josh.
That's a great point. It's like human psychology, right? They always say that motivation is only going to last so long, right? You can be so motivated. You're going to get up at 6 o'clock every morning. You're going to work out. You're going to listen to Morning Drive. But, you know, 2 weeks from now, all of a sudden the alarm clock starts to look a little bit better. Now,
it's dark outside.
The difference in motivation and the difference in having a drive, a passion, something that propels you is totally different. That's a great analogy. It is like the meeting where you get out and you're like, absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to go do all that.
New
right
show
now.
Format. We're going to do all that. And that may last for one or two games. But they everyone has been hesitant to question the leadership in the room. But, you know, there are transformational players in sports that by their very virtue of being on the roster, in the room, in the locker room, on the ice, on the court, whatever it is, transforms a franchise. It would be really nice to have even a small form of that from the Predators where, you know, 2-3 weeks from now, guys are coming on and saying, you know, Joey told us before that game he was going to turn it off. This was going to be a new level, and we all followed his lead because he's got, you know, 14 points in the last 10 games and 6 goals. Maybe you see that, maybe you don't. I mean, that all goes back to this consistency thing.
I do want to, when you look at the Preds play in the last 3 games, specifically the last game against Ottawa, it's been amazing what a difference Ryan Ellis has made with this group in terms of their defense. And look, we all knew how important Ryan Ellis was. We all knew how good he was, and especially the year he was having alongside Roman Josi. But it's really night and day since he's come back in the lineup.
He's
and
so
I
important.
Get it. The competition has not been good the last 3 games. Chicago's not a good team. Columbus, especially with the state they were in when they came here against the Predators, it was basically an AHL team. I understand that. Ottawa is awful. I get all that. But Ryan Ellis was outstanding the other night against the Senators. And I think, you know, 3 games into his return after missing 20 games, a lot of times when you miss that much time, it takes you a week or two to really get back into the fold, back into the swing of things. And it seems like Ellis has quickly gotten back up to that top level. He is going to be such a huge part of what they're able to do as they move forward here. Had the big power play goal the other night, which typically comes on a booming slap shot by him. It was more of a finesse play, wrist shot, just kind of waiting it out the other night. But it's been so impressive to watch Ryan Ellis come back and be back up to his top level as quickly as he's been able to do it.
But let's just say his return means that they start to beat the teams that they should beat. I mean, you look at the rest of their schedule. They get Montreal. They get Columbus again. They get the Kings. They get the Blackhawks again. They get the Minnesota Wild. Granted, it's on the road, and they're playing decent hockey. They get them twice on the road. You know, you beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, it's probably almost good enough because they're not going to go over. They're not going to play Dallas and Colorado and Philadelphia and Winnipeg and all these teams and not win any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, just beating the teams you're supposed to beat, so how simple does that seem? But maybe that really is the key. And Ellis has delivered a level of consistency, a level of restoring calm on that back end that's been so nice to see.
615-737-1025 if you've got thoughts on the Preds. A big game tonight against the Calgary Flames. 615-737-1025. Mattias Ekholm, I think when you look at the way he's played as of late, it's been a really tough year to kind of judge him because he's got 33
he's had
points.
A tough, you know, a lot of, you know, hoe to pull. I mean, he has had to carry the weight of he has played with some interesting pairings. I mean, you talk about the forward pairings, the defensive pairings have been equally the same. To your point, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's played with Fabbro, and no disrespect to Fabbro. Fabbro, I think, has done a fine job and has been, I think, exactly what I thought he would be this year in terms of, you know, he's 21 years old. There have been games where he's looked really good. There have been games where he's looked like a 21-year-old rookie. And Mattias Ekholm has had a lot of responsibility in terms of kind of bringing Fabbro along this year. But, of course, right now they're not playing together. Jared Tenorti was playing with Ekholm, and that moves him over to the right side and playing on his offside there. I think we spent so much time talking about Josi and Ellis this year and just the incredible seasons that they've had. I still think there's probably another level that Ekholm can get to, which is going to really, I think, take this team a long way. And it's been difficult, I think, for him to get to it this year just based off the partners that he's had to play with. And again, that's no disrespect to those players, but it's just kind of the situation that you knew you were going to be in after you make a trade and send PK Subban to the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, and you wonder, I mean, how much of that was Subban really a help to that? Now, Subban's not played that well this year.
He has not.
And the Devils are what they are, in, you know, not so good team any way you slice it. But perhaps with Ekholm, too, I didn't think that he played great last year in the playoffs. Even if you're just talking from a penalty perspective, of which he took several, the question I would have with him would be, does his partner, because the forwards, you know, you like to talk about you can play with anyone. How much would a defenseman really say? I mean, if you got them off the record in a room, how much would they tell you that their partner really makes a huge difference? I mean, you are 50% of the whole shebang,
yeah,
you know, when you're in a defense pairing. My guess is a great, great deal. If you were asking him how much that's played a role in his season, then it has to. I mean, if we're being honest, it has to have. But, you know, to have a solid big three becomes important because Fabbro is serviceable and you can get away with hopefully however much time they're planning on putting that third pairing on the ice, 10, 12 minutes, 14 minutes, whatever it has to be.
And Fabbro is going to be really good. I think most people believe that heading into the season, and most people still believe that, I think, when you watch him play. You have to remember that he's a rookie and it's going to be up and down.
Do you think he's better now than he was in November?
I do. I think
I agree with you.
Got a text on the text line. You're 1,000% right about the leadership in the room. I don't remember ever questioning the Predators' effort when we had leaders like Weber and Fisher. Well, I'm here to tell you, I've covered the team for 10 years. Effort was questioned a lot.
And I don't mean to suggest that Roman Josi is not a good leader, but I don't know that there's anybody that's transformative in that, you know, locker room.
I hear this come up a lot. Preds fans ask me about Yossi's leadership all the time. He leads in the exact same way that Shea Weber and Fisher
did. Nobody more consistent than Roman Josi.
That's always my comeback. Like, I don't know what people want Roman Josi to do. I think people have this image of a captain in the NHL that you have to be this rah-rah guy that's not afraid to go in there and just start throwing things around in the locker room when things aren't going well. Shea Weber did not do that. Mike Fisher did not do that. Roman Josi does not do that. You would be amazed if you spent time around them how similar Josi is to Weber and Fisher. And I say that, and I think people just shake their heads, but I always come back with, I'm not sure what you want Roman Josi to do. He's almost a point-per-game player on defense. Like, some of it is, you know, and they always say, maybe they should switch captains. Well, let me tell you this. Like, if the guy in the room that you think should be the captain isn't leading right now without having the C,
right, who would it
then
be?
They don't need to be the captain anyway. You don't need to have a C to be able to lead. Like, you know, P.K. Subban was a leader on the Predators. He didn't have a letter. I mean, this is the most overblown thing in hockey, is the captain and the leadership group and all these things. These are grown men playing a sport. The same group has been together for a long time. Most of this group that's there right now was there when they went to the Stanley Cup final. The leadership group is fine.
And my point about needing somebody that's transformative in that room is somebody that alters their play, somebody that leads, that elevates, you know, lifts all ships around them. The old saying of lift others as you climb. Well, somebody needs to climb and lift all ships. And maybe it's just somebody on one of the forward lines that says, I got this, let's go. And whether they verbalize that or not, if you can see, you know, oh, man, Robbie took it up a level on the radio show. I need to elevate my own game. I need to elevate my own preparation. Something that lifts all ships like that is probably what it's going to take from the forward line. What else could it be? Now, it's not a getting in the room and getting in someone's face, because we've talked about it all year on radio. I'm sure they have players meetings, two coaches. Everything that's been said has been said. It's
yes.
about play, and I mean on the ice production.
And that's where I go back to Forsberg, because you mentioned somebody saying, you know what, I got this. I'm going to take this team over, and I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to produce offensively, and I'm going to carry this team down the stretch. Well, the first guy I think of that has the ability to do that offensively is Philip Forsberg,
and
that's why that's got to happen.
And who cares if
now.
He says a word about it? Kawhi Leonard hardly speaks.
Shea
and
Weber
he's the best
hardly
player
spoke.
In the NBA.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, everybody has this image of Shea Weber in their heads as like this great captain, and he was. He is. Don't get me wrong. Shea Weber didn't say a whole lot. Shea Weber went out there and played and led by example. There's nothing wrong with that in the NHL. This captain thing is the most overblown thing.
What,
in
you
all
take
sports.
Josi off this team?
Yeah.
You would
I mean, come on. When we come back, former Preds coach Peter Laviolette has found himself a job. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17. Predators head coach John Hines will join us at 7:30 for coffee with the coach, so looking forward to that. And Alex, former Predators coach, Peter Laviolette.
He's back.
He's back in the business. Just named head coach of Team USA for the Hockey World Championships this summer, which is not a huge surprise. He's done this before. I think he did this actually right before he took the Predators job back in 2014. So this is something that he has experience with. So good on Peter Laviolette for finding a job to coach this summer with Team USA Hockey. I don't think it's going to be very long before he has another NHL job as well. Look,
there's
he's a really
lot
good coach.
Of good NHL coaches out there this offseason. If you're a long-suffering team, you got a decent chance of finding somebody. You know, I wonder what he's been up to. Probably having a lot of wine. I don't know if he's got a pool at his house. Maybe it's heated. You know, probably enjoying himself. Good for him, though. You know, you talk about this guy is one of the best coaches in the NHL history, partly because of longevity. But you look over 18 seasons, he's got 637 career wins, certainly qualified. He's only 55 years old, too. I just looked that up. I didn't recall exactly how old he was.
Yeah.
He seems like he's been around forever, and he has. But only 55 years old, and 04, 06, 2014, he's coached the national team. Good for him, and they could do a lot worse than him.
Oh,
he
no
was
question.
Not the Predators' problem.
You right.
know,
I mean, he wasn't
here you
all
go.
Of it.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Percentage of the problem that Peter Laviolette was for the Predators was
well, I don't know the
what?
Exact percentage, but, I mean, he did have some part of the problem. I mean, there's no question about that. The system, I think, at times, he did not adjust to what the players were doing, as evidenced by the fact that Kyle Turris couldn't find a spot in the lineup, and ever since John
Granlund.
Hines,
yeah,
Granlund, I mean, ever since John Hines has taken over, those two players have elevated. So I'm not going to sit here and act like, you know, he didn't have any part of the blame here. Now, do I think that he was all of it? No, I think that's kind of bared out and has been obvious since then. And David Poile even said it at the time. I don't think David Poile really ever wanted to fire Peter Laviolette, but at some point, push comes to shove, and you have to do something. So, look, I believe Peter Laviolette's a really good coach. He's going to find another job as soon as he wants to find another job. He's taken three separate organizations to the Stanley Cup Final, and you start going down the list of people who've been able to do that, it ain't very long.
But everything's cyclical, right? Every time he gets there, he goes to a new team, he gets the Stanley Cup Final, he ends up missing the playoffs and ends up, you know, out the door.
There's definitely a shelf life.
He's almost like one of those guys that is a really good coach, 637 career wins. You can't stink and happen, you know, fall backwards into 637 career wins.
Right.
But one of those guys that is kept from being great, potentially, like a truly elite coach, by a failure to adapt to his players, right? The classic example is like Nick Saban. Think of Nick Saban's quarterbacks when he got to Alabama. You know, it was the likes of McElwain,
John Parker Wilson,
McCarron. You know, and now he's adapted a system to guys that are elite athletes. I mean, it is night and day. And the whole time he's adapted, there's a reason why they've made national championships, because his adaptations are better than everyone else's. And maybe Laviolette lacks that ability to really tinker to, you know, get the most out of Kyle Turris, to get the most out of whomever. And who's to speculate? We've really given Forsberg a hard time so far on this show today. Whether his system, you know, is getting the most out of even the guys that played reasonably well for him. Was it getting the most out of Forsberg, Joey? You know, I guess the answer will come by how they do under John Hines or henceforth.
Yeah, and look, I think Peter Laviolette, like you said, there are going to be some openings around the league. There's already been some openings that have come and gone, the Predators being one of those openings. Minnesota has an opening. I would be interested to see what they do in that area. Right now, they've named Dean Evason as their interim head coach for the remainder of this season. But Peter Laviolette's going to have some options this offseason if he wants to get back into coaching immediately. And the sense I get from him is that he does.
Where would you want to go?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different things you have to think about there. I mean, Minnesota, you know, they're kind of in a transition period right now. You've got Kevin Fiala there. You've got some young talent. But you also have Zach Parise and Ryan Suter on contracts that just cripple that team from a salary cap. Yeah, I mean, and look, Ryan Suter, I think, in particular, is still a really good player. But those contracts were signed during a different time period under a different CBA. And those things are doozies, those contracts together. And everybody talks about, you know, Suter and Parise not electing to sign here in Nashville. And remember, that was kind of the rumor at the time that they were going to sign together wherever it ended up being. To be honest with you, that's turned out to be, I think, a huge blessing in disguise for the Predators, and you've been able to see that as evidenced by their on-ice success since then.
Well, and Roman Josi walked through that door for the Predators,
right,
too, which made a world of difference. They've done a great job of developing defenders. Now, if they had done as good of a job of keeping the pipeline of forwards going, they'd probably have more than one Stanley Cup final under their resume. Isn't it funny? Why does it seem like, as Nashville sports fan, every team in Nashville at its core has been built on defense? Titans were at times the awful combination of bad and boring.
Yep.
The Predators, at a lot of points, have been a team that has ridden their defense and goaltending. I would love, and the Titans were on the cusp of this last year, and this is segueing into what we're going to talk about next segment as we get into some Titans for a half hour before John Hines joins us. The Titans put a product on the field offensively, the likes of which this city hasn't seen in a long time. Now, the Predators are good offensively. They're in the better half of the league. Don't get me wrong. They're not boring. They're anything but boring, partly because
boring.
This team's so bipolar. But the Nashville has been such a defensive core. There's such a craving for some good offense in this town, one way or the other. Maybe Nashville SC is the ultimate answer to that puzzle.
Maybe. We'll find out. And look, it's funny because that's really the way the Predators were trending this year in terms of how they wanted to be built, was more offensive. That's why they made the move to trade PK Subban and bring in Matt Duchene. You wanted to see some of your top guys elevate their game. And look, October, they're the best team in the league offensively. I mean,
offense. And Duchene started out with 2-3 assists a game, it seemed like.
And think about where they would be offensively if their top guys were having the type of seasons that we expected them to have, because the secondary scoring has been there. I mean,
absolutely. Better than it's been in a long time.
I mean, it's all been there. So imagine how good they'd be offensively if their top guys were playing to the level that they just average every year, much less the level that I think we all think they can get to, specifically with Forsberg and Johansson and players of
that
ilk.
And you would hope, you know, they all make each other better. They've all reached a certain plateau that they're probably not likely to get to this year. If we think that they can play better, man, that would be an exciting level of hockey.
It would be, and that's going to have to happen at some point. Look, can they make the playoffs doing what they've done all season long with the secondary scoring, you know, chipping in offensively, Roman Josi carrying the team offensively at times and playing much better defensively of late than I think they have in a long time? Yeah, they can make the playoffs doing that. Can they make any sort of deep run doing that? No, I don't think so. You're going to have your top guys be that carrying force that takes you there.
So let's look at like one of the best teams in a bit. I won't even pick the best team. Let's just go with the Dallas Stars, right? Think about their top line with Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, two names that people know in the hockey world. Alexander Radulov, who Predators fans love. He'll always be adored in Nashville. You know, are those three guys all that much better than what Nashville's top line should be if they had three guys producing as well as they could be? My argument is no, but why does it seem so different? Isn't that the ultimate, you know, annoyance for Predators fans, that you put the best Predators players on a line and you put the best Dallas Stars players on a line? I mean, maybe you pick the Stars guys, but, I mean, you probably expect one team to win six times, the other team wins four, you know, if those guys were rolling out there. But the difference in how they seem to play consistently now, I'm talking about a line that was criticized by their own owner last year, but still, in the last, let's just take the last 12 months, it's been a world of difference.
It has, and look, they're aware of that, they get that, and I think they're taking steps to correct it. Kyle Turris was talking about it the other day. He's like, look, as top guys, we get it, we got to be better. Now, it's one thing to say that. Eventually, you have to go out there and do it, and the effort gets called into question a lot. I don't really buy into that. I think the effort is fine right now from guys like Johansson and Forsberg. As a matter of fact, Forsberg sometimes, I think
he's pressing too hard.
I think it's too hard that he's trying to play out there. Sometimes he doesn't just make the play that's right in front of him. He tries to go through like four guys.
Yeah, or through his legs.
You know, it's hard to get mad at him for that because he's trying, but you have to make the smart play. There's a balance between, you know, the effort that you bring to the table and making the smart play that I still think that some of their top guys are searching for. And Matt Duchene I'd put in that category, too.
So he has 38 points. What would you have expected him to really have at the beginning of the season?
Forsberg? It's not so much the points.
Or Duchene. Duchene has 38 points.
I told people coming in the season, you know, he had 70 points last year. He's not a 70-point guy. I mean, he hasn't been in his career for the most part. 60 was about where I thought he'd land. 60, 62 points, somewhere in that area. Probably not going to get there at this point unless he just gets red hot
point
down the stretch
here. From here on out.
From here on out. But we'll see how quickly and which guy in terms of that big four can be the first one to take off and lead the way, hopefully for their sake, tonight against the Calgary Flames. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk about the Titans. The franchise tag window officially opens today. We'll get into that. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.